It's a really exciting proposition, Sandy, to think that, you know, that we can engage our employer and partners and our industry partners to help us deliver on the learning outcomes of these programs. And I know it's about rewriting some of the curriculum pieces and the competencies so that it just doesn't look at those hardcore technical skills.
Hello, and welcome to our podcast series on future skills. I'm your host, Jamie Nordstrand. For years, technological advancements, climate change, and new business models have been transforming workplaces all over the world. The pandemic has simply accelerated those changes. Employers, workers, and job seekers are evolving and embracing the extraordinary opportunities that are redefining the future of Canada's labor force. On today's podcast, we will hear from Sandy McDonald, a Future Skills Council member, Laurie Edwards, Director of Student and Career Services at Nova Scotia Community College, and Mac Rogers, Executive Director at ABC Life Literacy. Together, they discuss the top skills required by employers and shed light on the importance of knowing how to match your skills with available jobs, a key part in building a learning nation.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sandy McDonald. I'm a member of the Future Skills Council. I have been for the past 2 years. And as most of you know, we've just released a report called Canada, a Learning Nation, a Skilled, Agile Workforce Ready to Shape the Future. So my background is I am CEO and president of Holland College, which has nothing to do with the Netherlands. It is the community college of Prince Edward Island. I have been in this job a couple of years. I'm a psychologist by training, but I've also been a deputy minister and a superintendent of public schools. And I am, I have to say, excited and thrilled to be joined by two people today. Laurie Edwards is the Director of Student and Career Services from the Nova Scotia Community College, our sister college in Halifax, but covering Nova Scotia. And also Mac Rogers, Executive Director at ABC Life Literacy in Toronto, I think, Mac. And I'm going to ask, first of all, before we go any further, ask first Laurie and then Mac, just to give a quick overview of what they do at their respective institutions and what they're all about.
Great. Thanks so much, Sandy. I'm the Director of Student and Career Services. So within that, I oversee a number of areas, including our career development services, our employment services, our advising program, work-integrated learning, and co-op ed.
And I understand, Laura, you cover Nova Scotia fairly comprehensively. You've got a number of sites in rural and urban Nova Scotia.
That's correct. So, yeah, so Nova Scotia Community College has 14 campuses, one of which is an e-campus, and we're located right across the province.
Okay. All right. So, Mac, could you give us a little overview of ABC Literacy? And you're based in Toronto, I think.
Yes. My name is Mac Rogers. I'm the executive director at ABC Life Literacy. We're a national charity, and our goal is really about raising awareness and developing programs for skill development. And this can be workplace skills or financial literacy or reading, writing, really anything. We're all about getting people to start talking about and start practicing their skills and begin a learning journey to improve. We're very big on awareness. We do a lot of marketing and communications to spread the word. We also actually develop programs and then have our partner, our partner organizations, we work with over 600 organizations across the country to develop, deliver our program. And it's really, everything we do is free. You can, some of it's online, some of it we can send you materials, but it's really about kind of connecting people and getting them started on learning.
We're there today for the listeners' edification to talk about the Future Skill Council report, but we're going to try to focus most of our conversation today on helping Canada Canadians make informed choices. So just to start, I'd like to throw out the idea of the current skills landscape in Canada and the impact that the virus has had. And maybe, Mac, if we can start with you, what's been your organization's experience with the pandemic and skills, and where do you think this is all going to end?
Currently, the current skills landscape, we had a problem going into the pandemic in that there is a skills gap, in that we have many people without jobs that are looking for jobs but don't have the skills for jobs, and we have many jobs that are unfilled because we can't find the people with those skills. And it is a significant problem. It's been a problem Going back as long as I've been at ABC, 10 years, and I think 2010, there was a report called People Without Jobs and Jobs Without People by Rick Miner. So it's not a new problem. What has happened with the pandemic and what we're seeing is that those most vulnerable, those that have lower literacy skills or struggle with other employability skills, are the most exposed because they're the ones that are often working in gig economies. They're the ones that are the frontline workers more often than not. They're the ones that are, you know, losing their work and then having to come back and then go away again, depending on how lockdowns are going and what part of the country you're in. So they're very exposed and it's affecting them psychologically, financially, of course, as well as just the confidence and understanding where they sit in the community in terms of a priority. So it's a really tricky thing to navigate if you're a low literacy person. And not only that, the supports that we offer for low literacy Canadians are often, sorry, for all Canadians, are often inaccessible or hard to access by people who are struggling with literacy.
I think Mac is right on. Our most vulnerable people are the ones that are most seriously affected by the pandemic. And I think about when we started into the programming for this fall, was how many of our Indigenous students who are located in rural and remote communities actually didn't have the bandwidth or they didn't have access to internet. And so when you think about that and how many communities across Canada and how many individuals don't have internet, and yet we switched to online learning practically overnight, and suddenly they weren't able to continue on with their classes and their coursework. So that, you know, for me was one of our biggest groups of how could we quickly address that and work with our government partners. The other piece of this was, the access to coming into college to pay for the computer equipment. So even if you had the bandwidth, where were you going to get the laptop? Where were you going to find the private space? Maybe you're sharing a home with 10 other people. And to do online learning, that really limited people's abilities to connect at that point.
There are many citizens, I think Canadian citizens, who find it hard to believe that the Canadians in the year 2021 who don't have the literacy and numeracy skills to be successful at a post-secondary program. Would that surprise you, the view that you'd hear Canadians say, what, literacy and numeracy is still a problem?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's something that we often shy away from in talking about literacy because the number doesn't make sense to so many Canadians. So the actual number from an international study with a really large sample size is just under 50% of Canadians read at lower than high school level. 48%. And then when you look at math, over 50% of Canadians, their math skills aren't strong. And to the point where when you want to put this into context, our math and literacy skills are such that almost 50% of Canadians may not be able to read a prescription bottle correctly. So that's something that's an actual tangible problem that we have. But when we talk to a lot of people about this, there's an element of disbelief because you may look at it and say, look, my family, there's five people in my family. We're all strong readers. We're all strong at math. So I don't really believe that. But, you know, these are the numbers. When you're looking at those at the lowest levels of literacy for adults, level one, it's almost 20% of Canadians. So almost one in five Canadians are struggling significantly. They have, you know, middle school levels of literacy, which makes it really hard to navigate and live a fully engaged life.
Yeah, when you think about those reading, writing, numeracy skills, those are your building blocks. That's the Velcro to which all training can stick. And if you don't have those skills, you can take as many courses as available to you, but the training won't stick because you just don't have that Velcro that will help you move forward with the training. So it's not just having the low literacy levels. It's so holistic.
Yeah, it's interesting, Lori and Matt, to hear that because just last week we sat around with the senior staff here and we were trying to determine, you know, given the limited dollars, if you had money and you're going to spend it on intervention, what would you spend it on? Because, you know, just talking to the two of you, you hear about the bandwidth and you hear about the technology, being able to access technology, purchase technology. the issues around employment, gig economy. And one of the things that underlined all of these issues was the fact that we feel the biggest challenge facing our school was literacy and numeracy of the students coming in, that even if they pick the right program, they don't have the literacy skill and numeracy skills to be successful. So, and that's a good segue into the essential skills. And I just want to focus a little bit on this, because when I hear this word, I kind of laugh to myself, because I've been around the block a few times, as I know the both of you have. And when I hear the word essential, I start thinking of, you know, essential skills, soft skills, employability skills, durable skills, 21st century skills, and Laura, to your point, the Velcro on which the technical skills sit. So we all know that these skills have been a challenge for quite some time, but why are they important? Why should other Canadians know about them?
Yeah, I always start, Sandy, with these are our skills around learning how to learn skills. So I think I mentioned about it being a scaffolding piece. And when I sit down with clients or people that are wanting to come to the college and perhaps they haven't had an experience in school lately, 10 years out of school, and if you don't use the skill, you lose the skill. And so we start talking about their personal skills and some of the things that they use in terms of resilience and grit and how well they are in working with teams. Are they creative? Are they problem solvers? And so we start with those personal things and then move from there into some of the things that we were just talking about, the reading, writing, and numeracy. And then my next check with people is usually around digital skills. And anyone who's been doing any form of working or learning in the past year, you have to have some pretty sharp digital skills in order to manage yourself these days. From everything from a doctor's appointment to going to school to buying things online. Those are the sorts of skills that I highlight for our clients. And then from there, we can start to say, okay, now, what are the other things that you want to learn, and how can we scaffold onto those things, the important things that you want in order to pursue the life you want to live?
So, Laurie, are the people you're working with, are they surprised when you talk this way about skills? Do they recognize themselves if they have these skills or don't have these skills?
Generally, yes. And I don't know if maybe it's an East Coast thing, Sandy, but I'm always surprised at how often people dismiss the skills that they have, that it's not, they think it's about the book learning and about what they achieved in high school. And, you know, can they do a written quote commentary on something by Shakespeare? And really it isn't. It's those living skills. And when we start to break that down and I ask them to assess, you know, how, when they think about their reading level, from 1 to 10, where do they think? And oftentimes they'll say, oh, it's about a 5. And yet when I get them to read a paragraph out of a book or a document, really it's much higher than they thought it was. And from there, there's a kind of a confidence level that we can say, well, have you thought about some academic upgrading? And that way we can fine-tune some of these skills that are so necessary for your future.
And Mac, has that been your experience as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think Laurie absolutely encapsulates what it is. It is the scaffolding. It's the building blocks of all your other learning, but it's also how those skills interact with each other, both when you're looking at the essential skills and the soft skills or the foundational skills, what employability skills. So, for example, when you look at doing a simple transaction around financial literacy, the amount of skills, like let's say you need to get a new credit card, the amount of skills in today's day and age to get a new credit card is phenomenal. I mean, you need to understand the numeracy of what the interest rates are and competitive pricing and all that sort of thing. Nowadays, you need to do it online, so you need to have digital literacy. You need to have, reading and writing, because you need to be able to fill out the forms. You need to have the confidence to ask the questions. And then at the end of it, you need to have the accountability to pay for the skills that you have, that for the card that you select. So it's the confidence is such an important part to, and then knowing where you're strong or not. I mean, the best example you can get is any low literacy Canadian living with low literacy that you meet. So many of them are just phenomenal in their resilience, and they can be extremely successful. They can be, you know, professionally as well as personally, and just so good at finding ways around their weaknesses. And I think that in itself is just an amazing thing to see.
You know, in my previous life, I worked as a psychologist in the prison system, both the federal and provincial prison systems, and dealing with, you know, the disenfranchised. And I meet people with very poor developed literacy and numeracy skills, as measured by a textbook or a test, but able to work and survive and even thrive because they found ways to cope. And one of the things that I see that is most incapacitating to our people, the young people I work with over the years, and I met with a bunch yesterday, is this poverty of spirit. Mac, I think you used the word confidence, and Laura, you talked about resilience. Do you see that underlying psychological construct, you know, confidence or resilience or poverty of spirit? Do you see that often? Is that something that you both of you have experienced?
Yeah, I mean, I think that absolutely we see that in our classrooms. Often the people that end up in our classrooms have navigated that successfully, and they have been able to walk into the classroom. And that's a difficult thing. We're hoping that now that's one of the benefits of the pandemic, to sound kind of silly about that, but is that, yeah, the silver lining is that people may get access to learning resources that are accessible to them. So ABC's developed what we call our ABC Skills Hub, which is really about allowing low literacy learners to interact with online learning without the complicated systems that are so often where we learn. It's a very simple, straightforward, and accessible system. So we're hoping that maybe people who didn't have the confidence to start learning, to go into the colleges, to go into the classrooms, can maybe do some start their journey at home.
Yeah, Mac, I'd like to build on that, because one of the other things that we're seeing in an online environment that sometimes it is you're presenting yourself in a different way so that you're not being ashamed by being in a classroom surrounded by others that you perceive are smarter than you. You're there listening to the teacher, you're using some other resources and tools, and you just get to be yourself without having all of those other layers of how people label you.
I couldn't agree more.
Do you think that a silver lining in the virus might be that it turns some of these learners into more comfortable, more confident, more autonomous learners?
I think it could really go either way, to be honest with you, Sandy. I think some people are going to be forced even into more vulnerable positions. I think with the right supports, with the right programs, with the right teachers, yeah, absolutely. This is going to allow people to start their journey. But it's also at the same time we're talking about the learners, the work environment is changing rapidly at the same time. And so we've known automation is coming along for years now, but this is accelerated. How many people do you know are using more digital technology, are using more automation to get work done, more systems in place, which is just more barriers? So a job that before may not have required digital literacy, all of a sudden, because of the pandemic, it's mandatory. So I think that it's kind of a balance. So I worry about some people still getting left behind.
I wonder, Laurie, and you in particular, Mac too, have you found that there's kind of a double-edged sword here to the pandemic, where, you know, the focused and motivated learner kind of thrives, and the one maybe not so motivated is getting left behind?
Well, you know, that's been a bit of a surprise to me, and I think just like Mac said, there's some positives and negatives, that there's some that are going to be super successful and others that aren't. And I've been quite surprised by some of our students that have attention deficit. And they love that online schedule because they can get rid of all those other external influences as they're sitting there in front of the computer interacting with the teacher. And I have other high-performing students that are saying, I hate this. I want to come back. I want to do the applied. I want to do the hands-on work that we did last year in class here at NSCC. And so it's a mix of both, and I'm really, it's about engagement and relationship building. And I think any institution these days, you know, I know at NSCC we are investing heavily in our teaching and learning faculty and helping them with the skills about how to better do that online engagement so that it can reach the reluctant learner or straight through to the high-performing learner. And it really truly is about engagement and relationship building.
Just want to switch gears a little bit here because we all deal with the same sorts of challenges. I want to talk a minute about post-secondary graduates, so the kids coming out of high school and then the ones coming out of our own system. So do you feel, Lori and Mark, that kids coming out of our colleges have the social and emotional, the soft skills that they need to be successful?
I think we'd have to say no. And it's not me saying that. I think there's a lot of amazing people, but the employers that have been surveyed over the last few years are saying no, that they're missing some significant skills, skills that we don't talk about enough. So we're talking about, like you say, the social emotional skills, and it's things like time management and stress management and accountability, those kind of what we often call employability skills. And I think talking about skills and including these employability skills is really important because it gives us a language that we can, basically a vocabulary we can share and identify and say, hey, this is something you need to work on. You need to understand this is what accountability looks like and this is what accountability sounds like. And our friends on the East Coast, the organization FutureWorks, does an amazing job of defining what each of these skills is and then helping people who may be, because we all have, deficits and assets in our skills, kind of identify and create the conversation that allows people to say, hey, this is something I can work on. This is something I can improve on. And on the other side, hey, this is something I'm really good at. And this is something I should celebrate and people should celebrate about me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think our employers, they want students that they want their workforce to be able to learn easily and quickly. They want their workforce to be adaptable and flexible, to be able to take direction, to work as part of a team, to be able to critically think through a problem. But here, I know this is a bit of a funny story. I had somebody that knows that I work for the college, and he hires tradespeople, and he said, "Why can't you teach them how to put their cell phones away?" And I said, "Well, we do try, and we rely on our industry partners when they have their field placements and their internships to encourage those sorts of behaviors." So It is one of those points that it's the everyday living skills and bringing those into a workforce and what's going to make you a productive worker for the employer.
These skills often are very subtle, as you know. You're talking about things like interpersonal skills, and Mac talked about a few of them, the accountability, some basic work habits. These things are not easy to teach and not easy to assess, and I think that it's a struggle sometimes for post-secondary institutions, colleges and universities to say, well, this is what we do. We feel here that, and I think another other colleges in the region agree, that sometimes these skills are best taught in tandem or in collaboration with industry.
I think it's a really exciting proposition, Sandy, to think that, that we can engage our employer and partners and our industry partners to help us deliver on the learning outcomes of these programs. And I know it's about rewriting some of the curriculum pieces and the competencies so that it just doesn't look at those hardcore technical skills, that we start to think about a competent worker in many ways, that problem-solving, communication, collaboration, and teamwork, and critical thinking, those, and innovation and creativity. I think that's a shared responsibility between our colleges, universities, and our employer community.
Yeah, one good example is we had in our paramedic program, for example, we've got a well developed sense of assessment process, looks at essentially the bedside manner of the paramedics. And so while they can do all their technical skills very well, this is also a critical component that measures your interpersonal skills, your ability to work with, because there's always two people on an ambulance, for example. And we found that it's almost impossible to assess properly and teach properly without industry being directly involved. And so it's a joint assessment rather than a college assessment. And we extrapolate from that to the rest of our programs and realize, wow, if this is what industry needs, if this is what our students really need to be successful and thrive, then we're remiss in not teaching that. And that means instead of adding a workplace integrated learning piece on the end of our two-year program for 6 weeks or so, that it might be better to have them out in industry earlier for shorter periods of time and then give them constant feedback from industry and ourselves. So far, it's in the initial stages, but so far it seems to be working well, so we think that might be better. While we're on this topic, we talk about the employer a lot and the employee. Is there things we should be asking government to do differently in terms of supporting this initiative?
We need a kind of a national recognized way of measuring every skill that employers and professors and educators think these are important skills to learn to be successful in life. And be that creativity and innovation or be it literacy, if we don't have a way to measure it, it's really hard to see if anything's getting done. So I think that's something the government can really support the nation on. I also think it's about raising awareness of the importance of skills. If you think about where we were 10 years ago in mental wellness and even the language we used in speaking about mental health, it was nothing like today, right? We didn't talk about it at our boardroom tables. We didn't talk about it in our dining room tables. And now it's a much more comfortable conversation. We've really brought it out into the sunlight and it helps us navigate the world, particularly with the pandemic going on, where we have a lot of anxiety and tension and stress and change, and we can actually talk about it. So I think creating a language, creating a vocabulary and awareness on how to use that language around skill development is really something the government and industry and education can all get together on.
Yeah, we have financial literacy. Why not have career literacy?
Exactly.
We've known there's a skills gap. We've known there's great potential here, but there's also a great challenge here. What's getting in the way? You know, how would we explain it to a layperson that, you know, we haven't been able to make much progress in the last decade?
Well, it's such a great question because it's one of those dinner table conversations that I often encourage a family to have. And even when you invite people over to your own house for dinner and you the subject of jobs comes up and you say, okay, name 10 jobs for me. And people can usually say what they do, their spouse does, maybe a couple of other occupations that they've interacted with lately. But, you know, once they get to number 10, they can't seem to go beyond that. So knowledge of the world of work is extremely limited to who's ever in your circle and wherever you live. So I think that's sort of the first piece, is that information about all the different occupations that are out there. It was, you know, there's new and growing occupations every day, and how often we don't expose people to those different job roles and their knowledge of them. So how would I even know to go to university or to college and sign up for artificial intelligence courses or web design if I've never experienced it or been exposed to it? So I think it's kind of that information gap is that first step, is how do we get this information in a way that's written and understandable, digestible, and engaging so that people can read about it, think about it, talk to people about it, and then make a decision about that's the type of training or that's the job that I want in my future.
I think that's absolutely agree, but I think it's also about making sure we help people match their strengths with the labor market information that is about the job. So finding a way that matches the two types of language we use around labor market and skills much more closely. So you could actually look at a wheel of skills and say, you know, this forestry job, it's really, I need it on all these different levels. I mean, I need to work on my, my whatever, oral communication a little bit, but everything else is good. So this is a good pathway for me. So being able to self-assess and assess the skill all within one wheel of conversation, to use a really awkward metaphor. I think it also goes back to what Laurie was talking about, was like people could only name 10 jobs, so they don't really know where they're going. And, you know, they end up, often following, sometimes that's great, following the path of their parents or their mentors. But it's also about making career choices and skills for careers part of your whole life. That's my feeling, is that we should be talking about jobs and not what other people do, but what you could do and what right from the very beginning of education and family, and giving people choices and letting them know the implications of those choices. Like, you know, people are going to choose to be disinterested or struggle with school, and they may need to take a break or mature later, but still understand what the implications of their decisions are in terms of career opportunities. You can't drop, not take math and then expect to become an architect, right? Like, understanding those types of things are really important. So I think that we need to match knowledge with aspiration, because aspiration, you know, maybe it's the optimistic in me, I think is going to drive more skill development.
There's intrinsic motivators and there's extrinsic motivators. The notion of I want a job with this amount of salary versus that intrinsic piece. I'm really good at this. I have done these things in my life. This is where I see myself going. That's that aspirational piece. And then matching it up with that labor market information piece about, well, then what's out there? How much will I earn? Where can I live? What skills will I use? So I think what we have to do is help people decide. What's a great way of thinking? I'm trying to think about this. I'm thinking about the Michelin worker. And, you know, I was thinking some career counseling about the life that they wanted to live. And they said, well, the job that I have here is doing the routine, same thing every day. But I also know how long my workday is, and I get to pursue the other things in my life, my family, my friends, my church, my community groups, volunteer, and all of that. And I think it's redefining, when we talk about career, it's redefining it that it's not just about the occupational you, it's about the learning you, the community you, the family you. It's combining all of those, and that's what makes up a career, as opposed to just thinking about the occupational you all the time.
Despite our initial challenges, we got, I think, a good chat in, and I want to thank you for your time, Laurie Mack, because it's been really enjoyable, and I can't wait to meet both of you face-to-face tonight. I think we owe the both of you a glass of wine. If you're ever over in PEI, I'll take you to our Philly Institute, and I'll treat you to a full dinner.
As soon as the bubble opens, I can guarantee you, Sandy, I will be in PEI to benefit from that great tourism industry you have there. And Mac, you're more than welcome to join us in September.
I cannot wait. I look forward to seeing you. Thank you so much.
Thanks again. I really enjoyed the call.
Thank you.
Let's Talk Future Skills is a production of Employment and Social Development Canada. All opinions expressed in this podcast are that of the individual and not necessarily that of their employer or ESDC. For more information on Future Skills or to read the Council's full report, which includes a more in-depth perspective on helping Canadians make informed decisions on skills development, visit canada.ca/futureskills. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast and click the notification tab so you know when the next one is released. Thank you for listening to Let's Talk Future Skills.